The new LinkedIn Hiring Pro can't undo your last hire, the empty seat. Who was actually just that, an empty chair in your office, because you couldn't find someone to fill it. So it just sat there costing you money with all its fancy ergonomic features. But LinkedIn Hiring Pro can make it easy to fill that seat with the right candidate, with nearly 60% of businesses finding someone to interview in the first week alone. Hire right the first time with LinkedIn Hiring Pro. Post your first job today and get £100 off at linkedin.com/AI hire. Terms and conditions apply.
If you're the responsible one, if people depend on you, if you're successful on paper, but privately you're exhausted, this episode is for you. Because what if the problem isn't your workload? What if it's your identity is built on being the one who never drops the ball? Now, today, what we're going to do is we're going to focus on talking about high function and burnout, the kind that hides behind achievement. And I really just want to jump into it because this is such an important topic that so many people are interested in. You know, why are the most capable people often the most depleted?
I have found that the people who are most depleted are the ones who are the dependable ones, right? Because they are the ones who routinely are saying yes, without even checking in with where they are. And a lot of times it's because they've taken on that identity of being the dependable one, because it's actually been a survival mechanism. It has been the way that they have kept people happy. They've kept the peace. They have not been a burden. They're not rocking the boat. All of those reasons are why a lot of high achievers end up being really burnt out, because they're always taking care of things. They're always the one who will have the solution or will get stuff done. And they're actually afraid of not being that person.
Right. Now, a lot of high achievers believe when I hit the next level, I'll feel better, but the goalpost keeps moving. You know, Yes. Why is that? Like, why does accomplishment not create the lasting peace that they're looking for?
Well, two reasons. One is they're looking for that external measurement that's going to create that internal satisfaction, right? And so Yeah. Every time that something's external from us, we have zero control over that. It's outside of our locus of control. What's within it is within ourselves. And the second part with high achievers is there's this, a lot of times there's a limiting belief or some narrative of not being enough. So right. a lot of the work that I do with individuals, we'll talk about even from our childhood, you know, accomplishing something, and there'll be like maybe a momentary, oh, that's great, but what about this? Or, oh, that's great, but now this, right? So it starts from a very young age of you may have accomplished something, but you could have done it better, or now we got to move on to the next thing.
I see. So why does like accomplishment, you know, when we have accomplishment in our lives, you know, when does the ambition turn into attachment?
You know, I think when you're talking about attachment, are you talking about attachment with the actual accomplishment? Or are you talking about attachment with others in relationship? Let me just clarify the question.
So I'm talking about attachment with others.
When we equate, I think ambition turns into and transmutes into attachment with others when we're looking for them to look at our accomplishments, and then that's where they find us worthy, right? So as parents, when we only validate our children when they've accomplished something, that attachment style that gets created is very transactional and conditional. Right. And then that creates insecure attachment, because the child starts to internalize, if I don't accomplish this, I lose that connection with my parent. I can't depend on them to be here.
So, you know, how does identity get wrapped around this productivity?
It's because what ends up happening is we make a meaning of our accomplishment, right? We make it mean that with this accomplishment or being productive, now I am a good person, or I am a worthy person. So we connect the thing that we've accomplished, the result, to our worthiness, our being. And what's happening is we're losing track of the fact that we're a human being. We're not a human doer, right? So all of our identity is already instilled within us outside of everything that we produce. Our identity is in our being. It's in our values. It's in our beliefs. It's in our core, our our character strengths. It's those things that make us who we are, but that gets lost and gets abandoned when everything is attached to, oh, I only get affirmation or I only get noticed when I've accomplished something. And even that is so short-lived, as we just mentioned. We acknowledge it and then we're immediately moving on to the next thing.
Right. Now, high achievers don't complain. They usually take over, they fix, they manage, they anticipate. But what does constantly being the strong one do to our nervous system?
So when we are constantly being the strong one, we're constantly on, our nervous system actually stays activated all mm-hmm. the time, right? And it's always in this state of survival. And when we think about our nervous system being on all the time, so a lot of times we think burnout is just related to, oh, I've got too many things or tasks to do. Most of the burnout is emotional burnout. And it's because our nervous system is activated all of the time, which also keeps our mind running all of the time. So it's as though we're running a marathon without ever getting a break. And we think about that. Like if you think it, just imagine yourself running and running and running and running and never getting to stop, what's going to happen? Well, that's what's happening with our nervous system. It is staying on all the time, which then we see cortisol levels shoot up. We see a lot of high achievers with physical ailments. You know, suddenly we've got heart issues, we've got physical issues, we've got autoimmune issues that are on the rise because we're constantly stressed. Anxiety, you know, the constant anxiety. And anxiety is really, am I going to be okay? If we boil it down, anxiety is, am I going to be okay? Am I going to survive? That's coming from our nervous system also being on all the time.
Yeah, that's so true. That is so true. Now, is this fight or flight like disguised as responsibility?
So I actually believe that it's the fawning. So we talk a lot about fight, flight, and freeze, but the one that gets somewhat forgotten is fawning. And that's really the trauma response. I mean, I'm just going to name it that. It is a trauma response to, and it's a trauma response that says, let me smooth this over, right? Yeah. So it's our high achievers, our over-functioners. They're I can't say 100% of the time, not everybody's the same, but many times it is a fawn response. You know, the over-functioning, overachieving, dependability, people-pleasing. I'm a people-pleaser. I say that I'm working on, I'm recovering people-pleaser, but it comes from, it's the fawning. It's the, let me smooth this over. Let me make sure everybody's okay. All to avoid conflict. Why? Because with conflict, now there's a sense of, I have to worry about my survival, right? So it becomes a way to survive. And if we can, and I've noticed this in even in workplaces where people will fawn at work and they will not maybe speak up. They'll just say, okay, everything is fine. You know, I'm fine. Sure, I can handle that. Yeah, I can add that to my plate. It's also a fawn response because maybe they've been in a toxic work environment and that's been the only way that they can survive.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's so true. That's so true. What a good point. Now, why do we feel anxious when they're not doing something that they should be doing?
Why do we feel anxious as high achievers when
we're not like, if we're constantly on the go, we're constantly doing things, why do we sometimes get anxious, you know, like, and it's hard for us just to sit and relax basically, like, you know, why is it traumatizing just to be able to relax that we constantly have to do?
Yeah, because it's become so normalized to our system. We actually have it. It doesn't feel safe to rest. And I can speak to this very authentically because, I mean, for the longest time, I couldn't even have the TV on without doing something else. I had to be folding laundry or cleaning up the kitchen or doing something else. It's because our nervous system doesn't know that it's actually safe and okay to calm and to be relaxed. And so that's part of the healing through this, or breaking that fawn response, is to actually start creating boundaries, internal boundaries with ourselves, where we slow down, we ground, we take time to just for 5 minutes, just sit and breathe. Start there, because it feels so uncomfortable and unsafe to do that. You've got to start small and then build up from that. You know, if we just said to somebody, okay, just, you know, go from this place of constant do, and then now just stop, it would be so disruptive to the nervous system. Like they would immediately spiral. And so it is about, how do we break this down into smaller bite-sized pieces? And I'm going to just start with 5 minutes where I'm just going to sit and I'm not going to do anything. I'm just going to pay attention to my breath. Maybe it's not even 5 minutes. For some people, it's, I can only manage two. Great. Let's start there and let's continue to build up on that.
So this breathing probably should be an exercise that we probably should really do consistently. Like, do you suggest it maybe in the morning or at a moment that you feel anxious, you know, maybe do a breathing exercise and try to get yourself down to a calmer state?
Yes. And I actually suggest with people for the very first part of learning to integrate breathing and actually paying attention to their breath, it
Yeah.
actually helps if you stack it to something you already do every day, meaning we all brush our teeth in the morning, right? So then as
Right.
soon as we're done brushing our teeth, take 2 minutes to just stop and pay attention to actually breathing from your belly, not from up here in the chest. Cause again, that's shallow. That's usually, if we think about panic attacks, like that's where that's happening from, right? We're just the short breath.
Right.
So it's just 2 minutes right after you're done brushing your teeth, pay attention to your breath, learn to build that muscle. You know, in the middle of your day, when you get lunch, right before you take that first bite, take another
Yes.
moment to pay attention to your breath, stack it onto something you do in your evening. That's a way to build it into it where it doesn't feel like, oh my gosh, now I've got to add something else to my day, or, oh, well, I'm going to do that, but then we forget it. We just
Yeah.
tack it onto something else.
I like that. I like that. Now, what do you think, you know, why does like rest feel uncomfortable instead of like restorative? Because like a lot of people, you know, they, you know, they're supposed to rest and, you know, they have a hard time resting instead of being a moment where you can renew your body, it becomes a actual negative thing to your body.
And again, I think it's because our nervous system is so used to needing to be on. And I will also say something else to that. A lot of people who are dealing, or they may have a friend or family member who's like, I'm so burnt out, I'm so exhausted. And they're like, oh, just get some more sleep. It's not that. It's the sleep isn't the thing that's going to help. That's why the restoration doesn't help. It's like, well, I got 8 hours of sleep. Why don't I feel better? And it's
Yeah.
because we're still got too much going on up here. Right. There's still too much that we're bouncing around. And that's why I used to not be a believer in it, but I absolutely am, because I do it myself. Is pen to paper, old school pen to paper, get the things that are in here out and create
Yes.
space. Create space between you as an individual and all the things that are going on in your head. So you can actually, one, become an observer, and you can
Yeah.
start challenging some of the things that you're either saying to yourself or that you're carrying with you. And sometimes we even notice that's not even mine and I can release it. But the other thing is our brains need an output channel. And so
Yeah.
if we're constantly on and we're not having some place to put it, that's why it
Yes.
doesn't feel restorative, right?
Exactly.
Because we're still on. Even when we
Yeah.
think we're resting, we're still activated.
Exactly. I feel it's so important. I like that idea because I think journaling is such a positive thing to incorporate in your lifestyle, because I for so many, especially myself, I find it very relaxing to just get those thoughts in your head on paper and just get it out. Because sometimes it's not always easy for other people to share their thoughts with somebody, but to be able to put it on paper, you're getting those thoughts out, and you're kind of it's a process. You're a healing process when you do that.
Absolutely. And I will say that I do have some clients who say, well, I don't know what to write, because it's that old idea of I will have to do it perfectly.
Yeah.
And so sometimes, you know, just coming up with one simple question of, you know, what was the most predominant feeling I had today?
Yeah.
Whatever the thing, just to get you started, because there's no right way or wrong way to do this. And
Yeah.
then really with the people who super push back, well, I don't have the time to do that. Well, we all have our phones on us. Start with voice memos. Give
Yes.
yourself the ability to just voice it out. Again, you
Yeah.
become your own witness when that happens. And that's something that I do, you know, in terms of working with people with around shame. Like, that's a
Yeah.
big part of the unshaming process, is becoming your own witness. Because shame, it lives and breeds in darkness and in, you know, the unspoken, unwitnessed places. So
Yes.
if we actually call it out and we name it, now we're starting to take the wind out of its sails, so to speak, and we're able to be our own witness. So
Yeah.
if you can't do the journaling, I hear you, I respect that, I understand it. Start with even a voice memo.
I like that idea. And I mean, personally too, is like, if you don't know what to write, like for me, I would sometimes just put music on that make I feel that you know, the mode I'm in, you know, and I would put that type of music on, and then all of a sudden it would trigger, emotions, you know, and that
yes.
out of the blue, they would just trigger it. And that's when I would start the journal. And sometimes it's just like, you need to figure out, I think sometimes a way to connect with your inner self. And sometimes music is a great way to do that.
It's a great medium to do that. And I love what you said. It's like it activates something. And so then you just give yourself permission to write. And that's part of it too, is doesn't have to make sense to anybody.
Right.
You just write. You write, and you just, whatever that inner self wants to put onto paper, we let it out.
Exactly. Now, let's make this practical. Like, what are the red flags that someone might miss? Like maybe the snapping at small things, or feeling numb during wins, or guilt when they're resting, and so forth.
I would say, yeah, and then you already named a couple of them. When we find that we're snapping, you know, something just activates us immediately, we're emotionally activated, that would be a great indication. Okay, let me get curious with this. What's going on here? The when we do have a win and we're just, there's no connection to it, we're feeling completely sort of numb to it, that's another red flag. I would think that, okay, let's get curious about what's happening here. The other thing is when we really find ourselves not being able to sit down, like truly not being able to sit down, or we constantly have to be doing something, it's a good time to take a break to say, okay, what's going on with me here? Because a lot of times, if there's this idea that I have to be doing something, I have to be productive, otherwise I'm doing something wrong. I mean, that's really important to pay attention to. The other thing is what you just talked about a few minutes ago. When we're like, we don't ever feel rested, there's nothing that we're doing that feels that we're getting restored, that's a time to really dig deeper, is saying, okay, if I am not, even if I sleep through the night and I'm still feeling exhausted, what's happening here? Or conversely, if we aren't able to sleep through the night, that's another example of saying, okay, I need to pay attention to what might be going on. Now, sure, it could just be I had bad food that night and I didn't sleep well. But if we're seeing a pattern of it over and over again, or we're seeing patterned sadness, patterned anxiety. I mean, I even have an ebook on my website on anxiety. Like if you're seeing these patterns for longer periods of time, like, we need to take stock and figure out what's going on.
100%, 100%. And the, you know, sometimes those symptoms are right there and people just don't catch on. Like that, you know, it's right in front of them, and it's spelling it out. You're burnt out. But it just passes people over and they don't even realize they're burnt out, but they're feeling all those symptoms.
And it's, sometimes it's the old adage, I'll just muscle through this.
Yes.
I'll just push through this. Okay. Yeah. That's here. I'm just going to push through this. That's another red flag. If you catch yourself saying, I'm just going to push through this, pay attention to that.
Exactly. That's a very good point. Now, what are the subtle signs that somebody is, their body's just completely done? You know, even, you know, if they won't admit it, you could see it, but they can't see it. But what are those signs? Because sometimes people don't even realize what those signs are.
Yeah. And I would say from a physical standpoint, when people are starting to notice chronic back pain, chronic neck pain, our lower back, that's where we hold our emotions, right? The back of our neck, that's where we hold our emotions. So those chronic pains, and it may not even just be your back and your neck. People will complain about hip pain. I mean, anytime that we have pain, our body is talking to us. And we were talking about the nervous system before. Think about that. Like if our nervous system is dysregulated for a long period of time, where is that eventually going to go? Our physical body is eventually going to feel it, and then it's going to communicate in any way that it can. So sometimes we have that fatigue that never goes away, but sometimes it is that pain. Sometimes it's, you know, suddenly we realize like, wow, you know, I'm cold all the time. You know, I deal with thyroid issues, and it's like, oh, my body was talking to me about, I was under a lot of stress. I was constantly stressed and anxious. And so I've done a lot of work myself on changing the dance that I have with anxiety, because that your body speaks to you in whatever way that it can to say, hey, pay attention, something's going on.
Right. Oh, very good point. Now, if someone is listening and realizes this is me, oh my God, you know, what's the first move they should make?
The number one move that I would say first off is do not shame yourself or make yourself wrong, right? I think that so many people say, oh, okay, this is me. There's something wrong with me. I've got to fix this. And I am so of the mindset and the idea that we're just human beings. We are doing the best we can. And it is about, okay, I've become aware of this And now what do I want to do with this information? So then after they give their, they have some compassion for themselves, that's number one. Then it is about recognizing where they can start setting micro boundaries. That's, you know, of the, in terms of the high achiever, the constant doer, the dependable one, where can I maybe set a non-scary micro boundary? And maybe it's just saying no to like a family member or saying delegating something in the household, like, hey, I really would like you to handle this instead of me, and then continue to build up from there.
I love that. You know, there also is a lot of people like, you know, that think, oh my God, you know, this job is stressing me out. I got to leave. I got to find something else. You know, it's not always the answer, you know, quitting your job. You know, is there some solutions? Like if people are always getting stressed out at work, you know, instead of just like giving up and saying, okay, I quit, I can't do this. What else could they, you know, how could they handle that situation?
Well, you make a great point, because I do think that sometimes we can say, oh God, I got to quit and find another job. We as a human being go to the next job. So part of it is to do some introspection. How much of this is me, right? Where could it be my own patterns that are contributing to this? Where can I take responsibility for this? And then if we've done that work and we recognize, okay, this really is the environment, the next part is to actually see if we can talk to the people that we're working with and see if there's any room to make adjustments. Because again, it could be almost a both and, or maybe I've had a lack of boundaries, or maybe I've been fawning at work and also they've gotten used to that. So then they've taken somewhat advantage of that and they've, you know, start emailing at 10:30 PM at night. And maybe it's more about communication. And then if that also doesn't work, then at that point, stepping back and saying, okay, maybe now that I've looked at me, I've looked at the environment, I've had conversation, I've communicated, still things aren't changing, then that might be the time to look elsewhere.
Oh, 100%. Now there are so many people that, you know, they're self-destructive, that, you know, there's so many things going on, they're burnt out, they're not taking responsibility for the actions that are causing the burnout, you know, not blowing up their life. Like how can you avoid not destroying yourself and being self-destructive?
Well, I think part of it is, you know, sometimes we notice that we have like burnout or something, and then we're just like, okay, like you were mentioning before, it's like, okay, I quit. I'm just out of here. Right. And just to your point, like blowing up our life, like I'm just done. I'm out. I always say it's about one, yes, awareness, but then we need to take responsibility for making micro changes, and those micro changes and micro shifts will compound to make the larger ones. You know, once we're aware that something is an issue, I mean, honestly, it would be lovely if we could just flip that switch and say, okay, now it's all better. But it is about taking steps and giving yourself time to undo certain patterns. So this isn't about blowing up our life, because I think that's what keeps people from actually going and seeking out support, because they think that what it means is they're going to have to blow up their life, because if this isn't working and I'm burnt out, then I have to give up everything. And that's not true. It's about figuring out the parts that are working and the parts that are not, and figuring out where boundaries might need to be instituted, where certain shifts need to be made. That's what it's about. But again, we don't do it in one fell swoop. This isn't Band-Aid ripping.
Now, could you give us like two or three starting points that are so doable this week that people could actually implement them in their life starting today?
Yes. So I would say the very first thing, well, we already talked about the breathing. I think that that's number one, is just like, just let's practice breathing, people. Like, honest to goodness, I think we put a challenge out there. I think that so many people would be like, yeah, I breathe. But then if they really paid attention, they'd be like, oh yeah, I'm not really actually breathing, am I? I'm always up here. I would say the very first thing that people, if they could this week, is to pay attention when they're saying yes, and what they really want to say is no. And then the very next thing is, before we say yes, check in with yourself, take a pause. Even if we have to learn to say, just this week, let me check my schedule and I'll get back to you. Two super minor things, but let's just try that just this week.
100%. You know, achievers, you know, the biggest thing is, like, you know, to be totally honest, like some people don't want to slow down, because slowing down means, you know, feeling, you know, I'm not doing enough. I'm not being good, you know, good enough. You know, how often is overachievement actually, you know, avoidance? Like, you know, how can we, you know, take this time to really say, hey, you know, I just don't know how to slow down. Like I can't see myself slowing down. Like, I don't want to slow down. I kind of like myself this way, but yet it's like destroying them. How does someone actually avoid this behavior?
You know, that's such a great question because, again, I know this very well. I used to say, like, I can't take my foot off the gas pedal. Like, no, I can't do that. It's too scary. For me, I think it really is when I'm talking to people, it is about helping them understand the narratives that have been running the show. Because a lot of that narrative is I have to prove my worth or a fear of failure. I actually have a free downloadable on limiting beliefs on my website, but it's about naming those limiting beliefs and those narratives. That's how we shift out of it or we can avoid it. It's to pay attention to the stories that are running the show. Because a lot of the constant I need to do, while yes, it can be a trauma response and it can be fawning, it can also be this belief around I'm only worthy if I produce, or I'm not enough unless I'm doing these things. Or the need to be needed, right? All of those are narratives that can be running the show. And again, it's about challenging. It's like, what's actually true? Does my worth really come from the fact that I can, schedule my entire family's, all the things for my family, be at every, soccer game and show up at work and be at every meeting? Is that what makes me worthy? Or is it the fact that it's how I show up as a human being, right? That's the work. That's the work because we're over-identifying with the doing and we're forgetting the being.
Oh, that's so true. That's so true. Now, why is identity work the real solution and not time management?
Because with identity work, that it is about how you are showing up, right? The time management comes with when you have self-belief and you are your own self-leader. If we don't have that and we think that our identity is all about production, we lose track of being able, we can manage anything in terms of time as long as we know that we're capable, we recognize our character strengths, we understand our values and what's meaningful to us. When we have all of that connected, we can figure out what our priorities are. And then time management comes second nature to that.
It's funny, but sometimes a lot of people actually they don't know who their identity is, because a lot of people, if I say, okay, let's strip away, the titles, take away mom, take away wife, take away friend, take away aunt, da, 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 take away whatever you do for a living, your title, your work title, and who are you as a person? And I would get these dumbfounded looks, and they just don't know.
Yes. I actually just had a conversation with a client yesterday and she paused. And then as I moved her through it, it was like, oh, I'm loving and I've got a sense of authenticity about me and I'm resilient and starts going down these things. It's like, oh yeah, that's what you are. You're not who or what roles you play. You're not the things you produce. You're this being with all of these qualities and values. And like I said before, those characters, that's your essence. That's your essence.
And I think a lot of people don't take time out, and they really should. They should take a moment by themselves and, you swipe out all those identities and make a list, I think, of who they are, because I've talked to so many people, and the concept of their identity is just, the things they've accomplished, but that's not who your identity really is.
Yes, and I challenge people, gratitude, I believe wholeheartedly in a gratitude practice, but I also challenge people to have gratitude towards themselves. And they kind of look at me dumbfounded. What does that even mean? And I'll say, appreciate things about yourself. And they always immediately go to the accomplishment or what they did. And then I challenge that with a follow-up question of who were you being to get that thing done? Right? Because that pushes them into their being part, not just their doing part. And I think that that's really, really important for people to start realigning with and reacclimating with, because that's where that sense of self really comes from and that sense of self leadership. And we start we because I am not saying put down your goals or that, being a high achiever is bad. That is not what I'm saying at all. It is about how can it work for you instead of cutting, like cutting you down and burning you
Yes.
out. How do we work with it? It's like I said before, I've changed the dance with my anxiety. I don't think
Yes.
anxiety, I mean, it keeps me on my toes at times. It tells me when I need to be aware of a potential danger, but the
Yes.
dance with it has changed. And that's what we're offering here today is just let's pay attention to some of the signals where maybe we're over rotating into it and it's now to our
Yeah.
detriment.
Oh, so true. So true. That's great advice. Now, when someone separates their worth from their work, what improves, in your eyes? What do you, from your experience?
From my, I can answer this from a personal perspective as well as from watching my clients. So I know that even as a, as my own self and doing a lot of this work myself, I have shown up completely different in my relationships, especially as a mother. No longer am I even chasing that, like, oh, I've got to prove I'm a good mom. All of that has somewhat subsided. And instead, I'm showing up in real connection with my kids, as an example. With my clients, they have huge shifts in their relationships because they're
Yeah.
no longer feeling less than and they're constantly trying to prove. And we're shifting that insecure attachment to a more secure attachment because, again, they're internally and intrinsically knowing what their value is versus
Yeah.
constantly looking outside of themselves for that validation.
Oh, I love that answer. Because a lot of times, like people, they value they connect work and worth as one. And they don't realize that it's not what they do at work, or it's not just being a mom that makes you worthy. It goes much deeper than that, and people, once they separate themselves from their work, I think life starts to change so much. And that stress, that anxiety, your appreciation, your connections with people, your relationships, your level of calmness, I think all that takes a huge change, and you become like pretty much like a new person when you, if you could do that, I think.
Yes, because the emotional regulation shifts with it, right? Because we're not at the, like almost at the beck and call of like the wind, right? Because like if our
Yeah.
worth is and our goodness is tied to our work, if we have a good day, now I'm a good person. But then tomorrow something, we get a bad review or something. Now I'm a bad person. I mean, that's talk about the up and down, right? So when
Right.
we're able to internalize our worth, it's intrinsic, that's steady. And that also leads to emotional regulation and it leads to showing up more present. And so it's across the board, the shifts that happen.
Oh, definitely. And have you seen that it increases your energy? Like, once you separate yourself from your worth from your work, do you see people become more energized and more focused?
Energized, more focused, and quite frankly, there is a new sense of, I don't want to use the word happiness because I feel like happiness is an emotion that comes and goes like all the other emotions, but
Yeah.
it's like they can access fulfillment more easily, right? They can
Right.
actually notice what is going well in their
Yeah.
lives versus only looking at what's not going well. They're able
Right.
to shift that perspective. That optimistic outlook starts to broaden.
Right. Oh, I love that. And have you seen people confidence change also? Have they gotten even more confident by being able to separate themselves from their work?
Yes, and also not only are they confident, but their communication changes, right? They are standing like they hold themselves in a different way in terms of their posture. They're not shrinking their voice. Their voice is more confident as they're speaking to other people because again, they're not waiting for some affirmation somewhere from some external thing to say, "Hey, you're worthy." They're owning that. And so,
Yeah.
I do, I see it. Their voices deepen, they'll speak up in meetings when before they were terrified to speak up in a meeting. And they're holding their space, so definitely huge shifts from that perspective as well.
Do they lose their edge, or do they finally like gain control of it once they able to separate themselves and from work?
I will answer this from a personal perspective. I don't think we lose our edge, because I think I'm just as ambitious as I was before, but I do not equate those results to how I am, who I am as a person. I'm able to hold space for who Kamini is. And if something doesn't go well, it sucks. And I'll be like, oh, that's terrible. And like, it makes me sad. And I get to be sad and I'll
Yeah.
recognize it and let that be there. But I'm not like, and now I'm a terrible person and like my whole world is crumbling.
Right.
but it hasn't also taken away. Like, I still have the same. I still think I'm a very ambitious person.
Right. Now, if you had to give someone three takeaways to, you know, for something that you want them to remember from this episode, what are three important factors that you would like them to really soak into their brain and maybe put into their life and you know, starting today?
Worthiness is not attached to being productive or over-functioning, over-giving, overdoing. That fawning is a trauma response. So if you do find yourself constantly trying to placate or avoid any type of conflict and you're taking it on as yours, pay attention, get really curious with that. And then I'd say the third thing is to really recognize that it's important to separate the roles that you play with who you are as a person and pay attention. You know, what you said before, take some time to really take some time to recognize, like, who are you as at your core versus just the roles you're playing.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Now tell me about all the different services and some of the products that you provide, because you have a lot of great stuff that you offer people.
Yes. So I do have a slew of eBooks on my website, including one on boundaries and anxiety, dealing with narcissistic relationships. So that can be accessed on my website. I offer one-to-one coaching with individuals to help break down, you know, in a very intimate way of like, okay, these are the patterns and how can we move you forward professionally and personally. And then I do talk a lot on conscious leadership, trauma-informed leadership. So I do workshops for either teams or, you know, workplaces for leaders in terms of how to be a leader, recognizing you're leading people, you're human beings, not human doers.
Exactly. Oh, I love it. I love it. Now, where can people find you?
I am on the web at comedywood.com. And then for social media on LinkedIn, Comedy Wood, and then Instagram and Facebook, it's Authentic Me.
Oh, I love that. I love that. You know, this has been such an amazing episode. Your knowledge today, I think, is going to help so many thousands of people who listen to this. You have such an amazing perspective on how to overcome a lot of the issues that people go through. And today we just tapped on burnout, but burnout is an issue that is really prevalent in our society. And a lot of times people are either in denial, or they just don't know how to help themselves, or they're just not seeing the red flags that we talked about. And you provided such great information today. And I just want to say thank you, because, you know, people really, you know, they want to feel better. They don't like feeling like this, but they just don't know how. And you gave such great advice today. And I just want to say thank you for doing what you're doing. And, you know, you've been through a lot in life. You've overcome your crises in life, and, you know, and you've really overcome obstacles that and challenges that came, you know, across your path. And you took all that knowledge, and now you're helping so many thousands of people out there and really giving them a second chance of life. And that's what it's all about. And, you know, from my heart to your heart, I just want to say thank you for being you, because you're doing a great job. And that's why, you know, I wanted you on the show, because you're just an amazing individual.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. And thank you for having me.
Oh, you're so welcome. And before we go, I just want to mention that burnout isn't laziness, and slowing down doesn't mean shrinking your ambition. It doesn't mean your success stops costing your peace. If you saw yourself in this conversation, that awareness matters, and we'll include Kamini's information in the show notes. And if you want to explore her work further, and if this episode has helped you think differently about success, I want you to follow her podcast, follow our podcast. She has a podcast on her show. I think you forgot to mention that, but she has
did. Rise Up, Live Joy Your Way.
Yeah. And visit her on our site. And, you know, we're here to give information, and we're here to help you solve problems. So thank you so much for joining us today. And if you like this show, give it a 5-star rating, subscribe, and we'll see you next time. Thank you so much. You've been wonderful, Kamini. I really love you so much. You're amazing.
Thank you.